Hello, you are listening to The White Side. I'm your host, Rachel Pendergraft. Welcome to the show. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The White Side. I am your host, Rachel Pendergraft, where we talk about things that matter to white people. And one of the things that seems to be mattering to white people, at least in the present time frame, is Donald Trump. Yesterday, the Washington Post ran an article about Donald Trump. It said, let me pull it up here, it said how Donald Trump is breathing life into America's dying white supremacist movement. Well, now, of course, we know that we don't call ourselves white supremacists, white separatists, Christians, patriots. Most people don't call themselves white supremacists, and I've been involved in this basically my entire life, and I know very, very few people who have ever use the word white supremacist. We believe that each race, people group, culture should be allowed to express basically their own culture and determine the overall actions of their race without the intrusion of other people. But we think that white people should be afforded that. So black people want to have their own communities, if they want to express their African culture in ways in their communities, as long as it does not infringe upon, we don't need a necklacing or anything like that going on down in the hood. But as, by the way, for those who don't know, necklacing was a long-standing practice of the Mandela faction. Winnie Mandela actually was cited in Canada, I believe it was, and not allowed to come in at one point because of the use of necklacing by her faction. Necklacing is the tradition, I guess you could call it, very barbaric tradition of taking a tire, filling it up with petrol, and putting it around a person, a necklace, I guess you could call it then. Usually black people, the Mandelas were communist, and there were some black people in South Africa, believe it or not, that were in opposition to them. One person who was in opposition, he wasn't necklaced, but he was the king of the Zulus. He actually was out, gave an interview to the press about 3 or 4 weeks ago in which he said that the new black government of South Africa was destroying the country, destroying the infrastructure, destroying the firm foundation that the apartheid government had placed the nation on. He had received accolades and awards previously by the apartheid government for his administration and oversight of the Zulu territories and so forth, had very good relations. Of course, they were inside the overall South African nation after it was colonized and then brought to greatness by Europeans. Nevertheless, he said that the blacks today are totally destroying it. They're inept. They're unable to run a government. They're unable to run just basically anything, municipalities, provinces, let alone the national government. The crime is up, and he misses the apartheid government. They treated him well. They treated black people well and created jobs for them and an infrastructure and schools and so forth. So anyway, that was necklacing. That is not a tradition that we would allow to continue in the black communities here in the United States. But nevertheless, for the most part, we believe in self-determination. People should be able to promote their race, promote their culture. We see nothing wrong with having black schools. There are some black people today, educational leaders, who take great offense at the idea that a black child needs to have a white teacher in order to make him or her smarter, that they need to sit next to a white student in order to get better grades. that they need white mentors to succeed in life, and they like the idea and are increasingly pursuing black schools where they can have black teachers, black mentors, associate with other black students, talk about black culture, talk about black history. One of the demands of some in the recent, I guess you could call it chaos, temper tantrums that some so-called minority students in the collegiate system in the U.S. have had over the last couple of months is that they want dorms and residential facilities on the college campuses set aside, basically segregated, set aside for black or other minority students. In other words, they want black people to be able to be with other black people in their clubs and in their dorming and in their cafeterias and in their student lounges and so forth. They want to be able to congregate together without white influence. I don't see anything wrong with that. And that's why you can't call us white supremacists, because we think that everyone has the right to promote their own culture and their own racial people group. I don't see any need to try to make blacks or Asians or whatever into a carbon copy of a European or a white American. I just don't see any need for that. I prefer my culture, and it really does not hurt my feelings if they prefer their culture. So you can't call us white supremacists. And certainly, as the Washington Post leading headline said, America's, I will use their term, white supremacists. Now, the authors of the article, I spoke to both of them, Peter Hawley and Sarah Larimer, very nice, cordial interviewers, journalists, very professional. Sometimes people will get upset. I shared this article on Facebook. Haven't really looked, had taken the time to look back at any of the feedback yet. But I imagine, because this isn't the first rodeo we've had, that some people will take offense at the use of the white supremacist tag, the idea that it is dying, and they will say, well, how dare that you spoke with those two reporters? Don't you know that they're just going to slam you anyway? Well, you know, for the most part, the article is pretty fair and balanced. We always like to say that unless you are willing to write a propaganda recruitment piece for the KKK or your favorite white racialist, patriotic, or white nationalist organization and take it to where you work and pass it out to all of your colleagues, then don't expect a reporter to do the same. All we expect is a fair and balanced story, and then we have to remember that once it's written and it gets to the editing room, someone else other than the reporters, for the most part, is going to put the lead title to the article. But I thought it was a pretty fair article. They mention about the what they call it, the Trump card. Kind of amusing. They say Rachel Pendergraf, national organizer for the Knights Party, a standard bearer of the Ku Klux Klan, told the Washington Post that the KKK, for one, has a new conversation starter at its disposal, and you might call it, they refer to it as the Trump card. And so it is. It is a tool, and we are always looking for another way to start the conversation about white genocide. It's a very, very important topic. We are approaching an era in society, a point in time we've never been to before. Our people have never, ever experienced it. We are approaching a time in which our people could actually cease to exist. We have within some of the figures and dates they give are 2030, 2032, 2040, 2050. Sometime in that, within the next few generations, decades, that the white population in the United States will be the minority. Already for years, for about the last 100 years, we have been the minority population around the world. Surprisingly to many, prior to that, the mid-1800s, we were actually white people of European descent were actually the global majority. It was not until the many insane emissions programs, health, wealth, progress, food, etc., education, that we began exporting around the world to third world countries, in which their population began a steady, unprecedented increase, now far outshadowing ours. So the dates are different. The dates oftener are given different. They kind of go back and forth between, 2030, 2050, that will be a minority population here in the United States. However, the census, the next time the census comes around, they are more than likely, they have decided that they are going to add some new categories to the census so that people of Middle Eastern descent, those of some Asian descent, such as in India, will have a box that they can checkmark, because surprisingly to many, many people are unaware that people from the Middle East, people from India and a few other Asian countries, some people in, well, any of your non-white Hispanics, and I will categorize them as non-white Hispanics versus white Hispanic, because Hispanic is a language group, not a racial group. Anyway, when they get those extra categories put in there, to allow people who have previously called themselves white or checkmarked themselves white on the census, they will now be able to indicate what their true racial group or background is. That will dramatically alter the racial makeup or representation, what we know to be true about the racial makeup of America. And so while those numbers, 2032, 2040, 2050, et cetera, is given as the tipping point for white people in this country, once that next census comes around, I think we are going to see that jump quite a number of years ahead, and that we are going to see that happen a lot faster than previously thought. The same thing in Europe also. So these are important ideas that we need to talk about, because what is happening is an ongoing displacement of white people. It's a planned and organized displacement of white people. When you have people say, like with White Trader magazine, people like Tim Wise, people of renown in academia, political leaders, people with so-called civil rights groups say that immigration, increased migration of non-white people into the U.S. or into Europe. When you have people say that this is something that needs to happen, it needs to occur because it will undermine Western Christian civilization, because it will undermine white people, because it will help undo the structure or white establishment in Europe or in the United States or Canada or Australia. When you have people say these things and then you see the actual real life outcome, that displacement is happening, that, my friends, is white genocide. It is nothing other than white genocide. And before people running through the streets with guns or machetes, if they've done in Africa and South Africa, before you have people doing a door-to-door, house-to-house genocidal attack like what we think about when we think of the word genocide, before that happens, the first thing that happens is the propaganda, the resettlement, the displacement, and the more allegedly peaceful means of genocide. In other words, they have to buttress their troops. They have to increase their troops, increase their allies, so that the ultimate, what you think of when you think of a bloody genocide, can actually occur. And so it is frightening. It is alarming. These are things, whether people consciously or whether subconsciously think about, these are the ideas that are galvanizing the Donald Trump campaign. People look around, they see what is happening, they see the immigration, they see the change in the demographics, they see the change in the political structure, ideals of this country. They see things being pushed upon the people through activist judges like the so-called gay marriage. They see the white privilege classes, symposiums, seminars, curriculum, etc. in the public schools being plotted against white students. They see the insane economic concepts that are coming out of not just the Democratic Party, but also the Republican Party, as both work together in order to disenfranchise the middle class white family in this country, in order to promote their own elitism. People see these things. They understand what is happening, and they are looking for candidates. They are looking for people who will stand up, say it like it is, and won't shut up and won't apologize. And that exactly is what Donald Trump is doing here in the United States. Marine Le Pen, she is doing the same thing in France. Both campaigns, the National Front in France and the Donald Trump campaign here in the U.S., is seeing record number support at the polls. Why? Because they are saying what people are saying around their dinner tables at night. They are saying publicly what people are saying privately. People like what is being said. And so absolutely, this is a conversation starter. This is a conversation starter. This is something that we can use, a tool that we can use in order to start the conversation about white genocide. Because there is no other more important conversation that we can have than to discuss and explain to people how white genocide is happening to our people, who is behind it, why they should care, and how Western Christian civilization is on the decline, is on the way out. That is neither right, it is neither Christian, it is neither American. It is unjustified for any of that to occur. And so unapologetically, we will use whatever tools that we can, talking points that we can, to discuss these issues. One part of the articles here says that for large numbers of Americans, Trump's blunt rhetoric surrounding immigration, minority groups, and crime may sound like finely tuned retrograde vitriol, but for Pendergraft and a growing number of white nationalists flocking to the campaign's circus-like tent, the billionaire sounds familiar, like a man fluent in the native tongue of disaffected whites. It's a language people such as Pendergraft never thought they'd hear a mainstream politician in either party use in public. And indeed, it is not. It is very, very important. Now, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is one of us. I'm not saying he's the Messiah. I'm not saying he's just the most perfect example of a Christian. I am not saying he's got all the answers. What I am saying is that he is talking about issues that are very, very, very important to white people. He is talking about issues that other people won't talk about. He's talking about the Islamic attack upon Christianity, and he is talking about the displacement of European Americans by immigration. How the, and he may not say it in exactly those words, but that's what he's saying. They're displacing Americans. They are displacing middle class America. They are changing the social fabric of our nation. He is saying things that resonate with middle class America. And I will step out and say not just middle class, but working class, and also I believe a large segment of your wealthier Americans. There are, we can't just automatically assume that everyone with wealth somehow has a, are part of some sort of a plot against middle class America. We can look at down through the ages, and a lot of the, you know, the wealthy people, they do create jobs, they do build companies, they do put people to work. And so it is unfair to target an individual or a family or a company just because they are successful. That is anti-American. It goes 100% against free enterprise. But what people are sick and tired of, and there are people in the business world who also feel that their hands are being tied, is they do not like the mix of the economic incentives that an international financial elite have gathered together in order to basically force these companies abroad, in order to force them into the third world labor market. And you know what? If our national governments would not allow those things to happen, at first, if they would not regulate so tightly, if they would not make it so difficult for large business to practice their trade in the U.S., if they did not force them to go abroad, we wouldn't have them going abroad. Second off, if our country, if our national government did not allow them to go abroad. Well, now I know some people are going to say, well, that's very anti-business, that's anti-capitalist, et cetera, et cetera. You know what? I don't care what label you want to put on it. I don't care if you want to call it, you know, capitalism and communism are just two sides of the same coin. They're not free enterprise. Communism is planned financial structure. Capitalism also is a planned financial program. Free enterprise is not planned. It's an organic process of people. It's an organic process of business, of enterprise, of finances. It is not international in basis. It is not exploitive in basis. It is not speculative in basis. It is good, old-fashioned free enterprise. Just what Western Christian civilization used to excel. What we find happening in any country that we believe to be based on free enterprise is then the rise of capitalism and a planned economy. And a planned economy is not free enterprise. It is not free enterprise. And so these corporations, they're regulated so tightly, they're forced to go overseas, then they're allowed to go overseas, they're allowed to exploit, then they do exploit. It causes and drives down the wages here. We've got the illegal immigration coming in. They help replace white people at the polls. They help replace people in the job market. We have not just the working and middle class, but we've got the tech industry being pushed abroad. We've got the tech industry in the U.S. now bringing in more and more tech workers because of the alleged lie that there is, or not the alleged lie, it is a lie, but the alleged idea that we don't have enough trained, skilled workers in the U.S., that is a lie. We do. We have plenty of them. What we don't have are thousands of skilled workers and tech workers that are willing to subsist and willing to live on the god-awful low wages that they want to pay. And so it's not that we don't have skilled laborers here. It's not that we don't have the tech that we need. It's not that we don't have the ingenuity. It's not that we don't have the intelligence in the labor market. Our people do not want to be exploited, and they do not want to work for crap wages. That's just the bottom line. And so the corporate elite, they bring in skilled workers that will work for less. And a lot of people in your tech industry actually find themselves training their very replacements. All of this is a part of white genocide. I know people may not look at it that way. It's all a part of white genocide. It's a part of undermining white Western Christian civilization. It's a part of exploiting people. And lots of people get exploited in the meantime. Illegal immigrants, sometimes they get exploited by big business. Hey, I don't blame them for trying to better their life. Stay in your own country, better your life there, and serve as a beacon of hope for your own country, and help, as the old saying goes, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, help your country. Don't come in here to our country, because, you know, tell you what, I don't blame you for trying to better yourself, but, you know, my family's more important to me than your family. That's just the bottom line. And that's how people in this country think. That's how people should think. You should take care of your family first. You should take care of your neighborhood and your community and your nation first. Our president, the president of the United States, should be looking out for the people of the United States first before the people of any other country. That is something that Donald Trump understands. That's why he's getting the support. That's why I think he's got a shot at the presidency. Okay, we are all out of time. Thank you, my good friends, for tuning in today to the White Side. I hope you will come back next week. Tell your friends about the show. Be sure to listen to the other shows on KKKRadio.com. We've got a new lineup. We've got some great talent out there. A lot of wonderful people talking about important issues that you need to know about. We've also got shows for the ladies. Specifically, I'm talking about white nationalism and politics, social ideas and culture from a white women's perspective. Yep, that's a show I host. And we've got things for the kids. We've got the Teen Talk with Andrew Thomas for white teens. We've got the Education Report about the white attack on white students. We've got the Weekly Hate Crime Report, Political Watchdog. Hey, people, we have got a great lineup every single week. Tell your people about KKK Radio. Help us get more billboards up. We've got a couple up now. Help us get more billboards up. Advertising KKK, White Pride Radio, WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Help us get more billboards up around the country. Send your donations in. There's a button there on the website. You can click on that. You can send us a donation to go towards keeping the present billboards up and putting more billboards up in other parts of the country. If you would like to be a sponsor of a billboard, send us a donation. Tell us that you would like to help. Maybe you can help for pay for a couple of days of it. Maybe you can help for a month. Maybe you can put up and help sponsor a billboard for an entire year. There are people out there that can help and can help spread this message of white Christian revival. All right, until next week, remember, If you are not on the white side, you, my friends, are on the wrong side.